Wiedner.
Okay. Good afternoon. I'm opening a meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee for Thursday, March 5th, 2015. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're having two public hearings and House Bill 2449 and 2833. And then we'll be having a work session on a couple of the bills, the RETC and the energy efficiency bills that we talked about earlier. There's a couple of amendments to discuss. And then we'll have a discussion around some of the policy questions that this committee needs to address before we move them to revenue. So we're probably not going to move the bills today, but we will at least have a good discussion about answering those questions. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open a public hearing on House Bill 2449. And Beth, can you go ahead and provide the committee with a brief summary of the bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2449 would extend the tax credit for the production or collection of biomass used in Oregon as a biofuel or to produce biofuel in Oregon from January 1, 2018 to January 1, 2022. The bill would also direct ODO to establish a pilot program to facilitate the transition to tax incentives that are allowed per unit of energy production from the current system of incentives which are allowed per unit of biomass feedstock. There is a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee. There may be a revenue impact and maybe a fiscal impact.
Okay, great. And who do we have up first to testify against that? You call up the department?
Yeah, I have to.
Okay, we have Andy Ginsberg and Matt, sorry about your name, Kuhnauer.
Chair Vega Peterson, Vice Chairs Reardon and Johnson, members of the committee. My name is Andy Ginsberg, and I'm an assistant director at the Oregon Department of Energy. I'm joined by Matt Krumenauer, who's a senior policy analyst on my staff, and we're here today to provide testimony and support for House Bill 2449 with the -1 amendments. The bill was introduced at the request of the department to improve the existing biomass producer and collector tax credit program and to promote additional development of the biomass industry in Oregon. I'd like to thank the many stakeholders who work with us to develop this legislation, several of whom you'll hear from today. We really appreciate the many hours that they spend helping us to fine-tune the proposal to best encourage development of this industry. And in addition to the -1 amendments, they'll be discussing a few additional amendments that came out of these discussions. Bioenergy encompasses a variety of different biomass feedstocks using a range of technologies to produce electricity, transportation fuels, as well as process and space heat, otherwise known as thermal energy. Bioenergy systems contribute to our forest products and our food processing industries. They support forest health improvements and water quality protection. They provide alternatives to landfilling food and other wastes, and they can save municipalities money. This all while generating renewable energy and reducing greenhouse gas emissions. House Bill 2449 is designed to help the biomass industry grow by improving the existing tax credit program and also by establishing a pilot of additional improvements. We've provided you with written testimony that includes a map and an inventory of bioenergy facilities located in Oregon, as well as a summary of the biomass tax credit program utilization over time. So Matt will now provide details on what the bill does, and then we'll be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
All right, thank you. Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, my name is Matt Krumenauer. I'm a senior policy analyst with the Oregon Department of Energy. House Bill 2449 with the -1 amendments establishes a six-year pilot program for bioenergy production, makes improvements to the current tax credit program, and authorizes these incentives through 2021 from the current sunset of 2017. The pilot program would provide a production-based incentive for bioenergy projects. This incentive would be based on each unit of energy that's produced, as compared to the current program that provides an incentive for each unit of fuel that is delivered to the facility. This is a more direct and targeted approach to supporting bioenergy facilities. The pilot program has a proposed $15 million biennial cap And the goals are to support electricity generation from woody biomass generated from forest health improvement projects, biogas production from anaerobic digesters that use animal manure, food wastes, food processing residues, waste greases, and other organic feedstocks, and space heating from woody biomass, like the biomass boilers that have been installed in a variety of different rural schools and hospitals in Oregon. The department estimates that within this cap, this pilot program would be able to support about 15 average megawatts of electricity generation from woody biomass, 3 to 5 new anaerobic digester projects, and a similar number of biomass boilers in schools or other facilities. In addition, the Port of Tillamook Bay, which operates a community digester, would have the option of participating in either the pilot program or continuing to utilize manure from dairies that receive the existing producer or collector tax credit. This is a fairly unique facility, and Michelle Bradley from the Port can describe a little bit of that a little later. Since the pilot program is fairly modest, projects would be selected through a process using the criteria that are contained within Section 11 of the printed bill. These criteria will evaluate the benefits that these projects provide to Oregon and include the amount of energy generated, emission reductions from these facilities, and the contribution that these projects make to natural resource and environmental goals for the state, such as forest health improvements and supporting fire risk reduction treatments, and supporting nutrient management on dairy farms, providing opportunities for waste grease and food waste that would otherwise be landfilled. New or expanded or restarted or repowered projects would be given priority in the pilot. And criteria also include provisions that ensure high-performing projects would be selected and based on their efficiency and other technology-specific standards. Pilot program would be administered through performance agreements that the state would enter into with participating projects. These agreements would provide the terms and conditions and performance requirements that would need to be met by the facility in order to receive the incentive. The agreements would also specify the maximum incentive that each facility could earn. Section 11 of the bill also provides the criteria for determining the project-specific incentive level. The incentive would be based on the difference between the cost to produce each unit of energy and the monetary value of that energy. For example, if a facility can produce a megawatt hour of electricity for $85, but can only sell that megawatt hour for $45, an incentive would be structured to fill that gap. The performance agreements could be up to 6 years, beginning with tax year 2016, but would not extend beyond tax year 2021. And Section 14 of the bill directs the department to evaluate and report back to the legislature on the effectiveness of this program and its effectiveness compared to other incentive programs that are offered by the state, including the existing biomass tax credit program. In addition to the establishment of this limited pilot, House Bill 2449 makes improvements to the current program and also extends it through tax year 2021. This extension allows the current industry to continue through the pilot and ensure certainty for the industry as we evaluate the effectiveness. The specific changes that this bill would make to the current program include adding food wastes and food processing residues as eligible feedstocks and treat waste grease with a specific tax credit rate instead of rolling it in with used oil as is currently handled. These changes reflect the emerging opportunities that these feedstocks provide and the growing interest in finding alternatives to traditional disposal opportunities. The bill would also change the incentive rate for manure delivered to a digester. We have discussed this change extensively with stakeholders, and they will be providing you with some alternatives to consider. The current program is codified in two different statutes. One statute contains the definitions of biomass, while the other statute contains the types of eligible biomass and their associated credit rates. This bill would align that definition and the types of biomass, and also align that definition used in this program with definitions that are included in other Oregon statutes to provide consistency. And finally, the biomass tax credit currently cannot be earned by a non-taxpayer, such as a port, a nonprofit, certain tribal entities, or municipalities. This bill would allow these entities to participate in the program. In addition to these improvements, the bill provides the department with limited authority to monitor and respond to market conditions by adjusting the incentive levels up or down, similar to the authority the department has to adjust the solar incentive rate under the Residential Energy Tax Credit Program. Any adjustment would be made through rule. However, the bill establishes limitations and parameters on this authority. These limitations include a credit rate could only be adjusted once in any calendar year and not by more than 25%. Any changes would only be allowed to go into effect the following tax year after the adjustment was made, and credit rates could not be changed prior to 2017. The credit rate for animal manure would not be able to be adjusted through rule. In determining if an adjustment is warranted, the department would work with affected stakeholders, and the bill provides market conditions that the department must take into consideration. These include the processing transportation costs associated with each individual feedstock, any technology advancements or alternative markets for that biomass. The bill also provides controls to ensure that biomass supported through the tax credit is also not eligible to be supported through the pilot program, so that you're not able to participate in both. House Bill 2449 with the -1 amendments makes important improvements to this program and updates the tools that the state has to support and grow the bioenergy industry. We ask for your support of this bill with the -1 amendments, and we would be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a massive bill. I mean, in terms of pages, there's a lot of stuff here. You quickly kind of went through at the end of Section 11, specifically verses or lines 31, 32 that deal with where there's a delta perhaps between energy production costs and the value of the energy produced. Could you discuss that? You mentioned something about the department could craft some sort of, I forget the word you use, but mitigating circumstance or something. But if a product is produced, it costs X number of dollars to produce it, but it can only be sold for a different value, what are you proposing to do in that situation? If the production costs are higher than the retail costs, let's just say.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson. The concept behind the pilot program is to be able to provide a production-based incentive on each unit of energy. Currently, it often costs more to generate the electricity from woody biomass than the current market rates for the power that's produced. The price of electricity that many of the facilities are offered is what's called the avoided cost rate. Mm-hmm. And currently those are fairly low, especially in the early stages of a contract period, sometimes as low as $37, $40, $45 a megawatt hour. And it often costs more than $80 a megawatt hour to purchase the fuel, cover debt service, and cover operations and maintenance at the facility generating that power. Under this pilot program, we would propose to establish in the performance agreement that incentive rate that would essentially be set at that delta to make that facility able to produce power profitably during the period when the market prices for that power are lower than the costs associated with generating it.
Follow up.
So in essence, you're proposing to subsidize power that's generated, but is generated at a rate that the market isn't willing to pay that price. Is that correct?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, in essence, the incentive would fill that gap between
correct.
That
it'll be subsidized.
Cost.
Yeah. Okay. I understand that. Thank you.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To echo the Vice Chair's remarks, a lot in the bill is on page 4. Lines 16 through looks like 19. The department is given the authority to establish its own fees. Tell us what are we doing now? How do we take care of what it costs for the department to administer the program?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, thank you. This language is very similar language to what the department has for the other incentive programs that it manages. The program currently is supported through fees. For each application, the applicant submits a review fee. That's based on the percentage of the requested tax credit amount. This language is included to align the fee authority in this program with the fee authority that's included in other incentive programs that are managed by the department.
Follow up. Do you see them changing?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Bentz, I don't believe that the department would evaluate changing the fee structure for the current program. It would be administered very similar to how it is today. There would need to be a discussion around the fee structure for the pilot program.
Follow up. So I'm not following this. I'm not following. Currently, you get the fees back when you negotiate a contract and you put that amount in. You get your cost back for your department. Is that how it's happening now?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, the current program is not administered through performance agreements. We accept applications for certification after the biomass collection has occurred and the material has been delivered to a facility. The applicant then submits records showing where the material came from, how much material there was, and where that material was delivered to, including a receipt. They include that with the application form the department provides and the fee, and that is submitted to the department, and then the department reviews that application and issues a decision. So the application fee is submitted at the time of the application.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Okay, I apologize for not knowing how this works.
Yeah.
Where does the amount of the fee come from? The fee you're talking about, who sets it? How much is it? Is it a percentage? Where does that come from?
Yeah, sure. Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Bentz. The current fee structure is set in rule, and it's there's a set dollar amount per application, and then it includes a percentage of the requested tax credit amount. That's currently set in rule and has been in place since the department administered the program or began administering the program in 2010.
And a follow-up.
Follow-up.
And so how does this change that? What's wrong with what you're doing now that would make you want to change it?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, we didn't view this language as changing how we're approaching the fee structure for the current program. Rather, this aligns this statute's language with the other, with this authority that's in our other tax credit programs. It doesn't expand the amount of fees. It simply uses the same language as is included in the other tax credit programs.
Madam Chair, thank you. So if you have a fixed fee in your current rules and you're changing to establishing a schedule of reasonable fees, I see that as quite a change. Am I missing something? Can you change those so-called fixed fees currently? Do you have that power?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, I do believe we have the authority under current statute to change the fees. They are set in rule. And I'm not aware that this would change that authority.
So if I could add to that, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, if you look on page four, lines 14 through 16 of the printed bill, is the existing fee authority that's being replaced, and it's very similar result. It says that we can charge a fee not to exceed the cost of the program. We can change the fee. But the language, the way this is worded in the statute, is different than our other tax credit programs, and we're just trying to align the wording of the statute. So this wouldn't necessarily affect the fee schedule. It's just aligning the language. And as Matt said, we would have to establish a new fee anyway for the pilot program. But for the existing program, I don't think there's any plan to change the fee. But we would have had the authority under the old language to change it if necessary due to cost of the program anyway.
Madam Chair, I don't want to make this a bigger deal than it has to be. I think it's changing, but that's just my reading of it. So I'll follow up later with that discussion. That's of interest. Another question?
Yes, go ahead.
So can you share with us, in your opinion, in this bill, is this impacting already existing programs? And if so, how? Start with the biggest one first. Unless it's not affecting existing credits that already have been issued.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Bentz, these changes would not affect any existing credits that have been issued under this program. It would change the eligible biomass under the current program beginning in 2016 if the bill was adopted, and would add eligible feedstocks. It would not remove any eligible feedstocks. The change to current program participants could be impacted if they were to participate in the pilot program. If they were able to participate in the pilot program, they would no longer be able to participate in the current biomass producer collector tax credit program.
And this is my final question for the moment.
Okay.
There was somewhere in the bill, when I was reading it online earlier, there was a paragraph that allowed the department to change the tax credit, and I think it's actually found it on page 6, lines, section 4. They may adopt rules to adjust the credit rates provided under this section. And it says only once and not to exceed 50%. Does that mean up or down?
Representative Vega Peterson, Representative Bentz, yes, I should qualify that the Dash 1 amendments do adjust the 50% to 25%. But the concept is that this tax credit rate are set in statute, and the cost associated with producing or collecting biomass, transporting it, and the markets that are available for that material change over time. Many of the tax credit rates that are currently in statute were established in 2007 and have not been modified or adjusted since. This authority, or this concept, was modeled after the authority the department has under the residential tax credit program to evaluate changes in the cost of solar and be able to adjust the incentive that the state offers to residential solar installations over time. This is a similar concept in that the department would work with stakeholders over time to evaluate if there's been changes in the input costs associated with these activities or the market value of these materials to align the incentive with the need that arises. Right now, the credit rates are set in statute, are static, and cannot be adjusted without action of the legislature.
Thank you.
Can you go into a little bit more detail on why you're making the changes and why you're coming forward with the changes now?
Sure. Representative Vega Peterson, thank you. We have taken some time to evaluate this program since we began administering the certification program since 2007. If you look at the attachment 3 to our written testimony, it shows you what this program has provided support for over the years, and that support has changed. And we've recognized that the market for biomass and the cost associated with that have changed over the years. We've studied the impact of this program and recognize the value of it, but we also realize that there are opportunities to further improve how effective this program is at supporting the biomass industry. There's been changes in federal and state policy that impact this. Many of the federal programs that were available in 2009 and earlier are no longer available or have been diminished, as have many of the state incentive programs. These changes react to both those changes in the policy framework and the markets that are available for these industries, and are a mechanism to help make this tool more effective at promoting additional development of this industry while continuing to provide some consistency for the existing industry in trying to transition to a program that is going to be able to support expanded development of new facilities in the state.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, Representative Foley.
Thank you. In the Dash 1 amendment, there are some changes, I believe, to Section 11. I was curious about where you deleted the words that would otherwise be destined for landfill disposal in terms of the food waste, I believe. Can you explain to me why you've made this much broader?
Yes, Representative Vega Peterson, or Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holvey, thank you for the question. We suggested that that phrase that would otherwise be destined for landfill disposal be removed to reflect not all wastes are disposed of in landfills. Some of them are disposed of into the wastewater treatment system, for example, or maybe disposed of in another way. And we didn't want to inadvertently exclude materials like waste grease that we would like to provide an incentive for, but may not be disposed of in a landfill in all cases. So it was really meant to make sure that we weren't inadvertently excluding certain types of feedstock by limiting it just to those that would have otherwise gone into a landfill. Some of them would have perhaps been disposed of through other mechanisms.
Follow up. So I assume from that there you do not distinguish between these post residues that may have a marketable value versus some that don't. They would both be eligible in this.
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holvey, the way that we've tried to define especially food processing wastes is to make sure that they are indeed a waste stream, and that is the intent of the program, is not to influence existing markets or try to divert biomass of any type from a higher value use. This is targeted towards material that would otherwise be left to decay in our forests or our fields, disposed of in a variety of different ways, but is not designed to try to influence material from existing value-added uses.
Okay. One more?
Yeah.
And then on in that same section, just curious, you've changed a definition, I guess, to jobs instead of employment positions.
Chair Vega Peterson,
so explain that to
Holvey.
Me. Jobs seems pretty broad, and employment positions may be specific. I'm just trying to what are you trying to get to?
Thank you. We didn't change any of our intent with that change. We thought that jobs sounded better than employment positions, and is also the term that we find used most often in other places. So we were just trying to provide consistency and clarity to what we meant. We didn't mean to change the meaning of jobs or employment positions.
Well, I'm just curious if we do have a definition of jobs.
Representative, or Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holvey, I am not aware that this statute or this bill provides a definition of jobs, but I am sure that we can follow up and make sure that we're using a pre-existing definition that is accepted in statute.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Reardon.
I think it should be careers, but, anyway. Obviously, we're trying to help support some of these industries while they're maturing, and so there's some financial aspects to the program. Are there non-monetary measures that you have that would help us gauge the value and the benefit from doing any of this?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Reardon, thank you for the question. I'd refer you to our written testimony. We provide a little bit more clarity on the criteria that would be used to evaluate projects under the pilot program, and these are similar to some of the values that we receive in Oregon from the current program. These include non-energy values such as contribution of the project to help supporting forest health improvement or restoration activity, helping reduce nitrate pollution to our waterways, and helping municipalities manage some of the different waste streams and expenses associated with failed soils and greases or other activities. Some of the other non-energy benefits include helping strengthen existing businesses. Many times bioenergy systems are installed at our lumber mills, food processing facilities, wastewater treatment plants, dairy farms, and are integrated into those systems. Those systems do help strengthen the overall business and provide those types of non-energy values as well. That's one of the things that we have tried to recognize in designing the pilot program, and also the items that we recognize we do already receive from the current program.
Okay. And I've seen examples of that, so thank you.
Okay. Any other questions? Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just wondering if the department in creating this pilot would have in view the potential that as a result of the pilot and a result of perhaps providing some incentives for some of these, let's just say, non-developed biomass type of opportunities now, that at the end of this pilot project, they might, their process, they may say that, you know, this just, there just isn't a real viable, sustainable presence here, and that going forward, we would not incorporate this component into a tax credit program for the state of Oregon. Is that possible?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Johnson, that is possible. And that's why we've proposed the pilot in a fairly modest program. We have designed a few controls into the pilot program that we feel will help with that. In one, the terms and conditions and incentive rates would be established through these performance agreements. And an incentive wouldn't be authorized until after the facility performed and generated the energy that it committed to in those performance agreements. The other aspect is that we have included in the bill a section that requires the department to evaluate and report back to the legislature every odd numbered year. So we will be monitoring closely the implementation of the program, the development of projects under the pilot, and comparing that to the current program and bringing that back to the legislature every odd numbered year to make sure that we can report on the effectiveness and any challenges or opportunities that we see emerging from the pilot.
Representative Holby.
Thank you, and I apologize if maybe you've already described this, but I'm sort of curious, when you establish these values for the different types of biomass, and, you know, how do you establish that criteria when you're comparing the two? Is it based on the amount of energy that particular type of biomass creates, or is it based on, you know, other factors as well? How do you come up with, you know, $5 per wet ton or $3 per wet ton or $10 per dry ton or whatever, you know, when you're comparing these different feedstocks?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holby, in a lot of ways, that's a very difficult question to answer. And the reason for that is because we have in this program a variety of different types of biomass. You have biomass coming from our forests, which require a lot of heavy equipment, a lot of labor, a lot of fuel input, and a lot of time to go sometimes hundreds of miles into very remote areas to collect that material and bring it to a facility so that it can be used to generate energy instead of being open burned. In other cases, you have agricultural residuals that are collected from our grass fields or from our wheat fields. You also have urban waste streams like food processing wastes or municipal food wastes. These all have very different collection costs, cost structures, and then ultimately end uses. Some of this material is used to produce transportation fuel. Some of this material is used to produce electricity. And some of it is used to produce biogas, which could be used to produce a transportation fuel or electricity or thermal energy. So it's a very difficult question to ask. I don't have this in front of me, but we have evaluated the relative value of each of these incentives and what some of the cost inputs are, and we'd be happy to provide that to you. But I don't have that in front of me, but it is a key question that we have considered, and it's very difficult given the various types of feedstocks and the various types of technologies and energy generation that comes from this program.
Just one follow-up.
So
I'm hearing that you're basing that, establishing those different price points based on costs. Do you also consider other values that may be attributable to a particular feedstock or use of a particular feedstock?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holby, the current program doesn't...
I like avoided costs.
thank you. The current program doesn't address any of those other values. Those tax credit rates are set in statutes. But in the pilot program, presumably the incentive rate would consider all of these values that are considered in the criteria when establishing and negotiating individual incentive rates. But the criteria does tie it to the costs to produce the energy and the monetary value of that energy. Some of these projects are generating additional revenue sources through co-products or through the sale of carbon credits or other types of revenue streams. And so, but the idea behind the pilot program is that those in that incentive level would be based on sort of the difference between what they can get in terms of their avoided costs and the cost to cost or they incur to produce that unit of energy.
Thanks.
Representative.
Apologize, Madam Chair. I want to follow up on that because that's really an excellent question, and I just, for purposes of trying to determine whether to move forward with these types of tax credits, the measure of the value of that which we're trying to incent is important, and I think that's where President Polavy was going with that. So where do we look in here to see how we measure that value? What's, because that's, I think that was the question. What is it that we're, what will tell us that this is just the greatest way to invest this money we've ever seen? Where is that?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, another tough question. There's kind of two ways I would approach that and answer that. One is that we will be evaluating projects under the pilot program based on the contribution they have to those values prior to selecting them. And then we do have the requirement to...
Madam Chair, if I may.
Oh, yes.
Which values?
Yeah. I apologize. The criteria that are included in Section 11 speak to the value that these projects provide to Oregon. The value that they provide to Oregon is a key factor or the factor in how we will be providing or how we will be selecting projects. So if you refer to the written testimony on page 3, we begin to detail what some of these different criteria would measure. One of those being the amount of energy production and the energy return on the state's investment, if you will, of providing this type of incentive. Others include the contribution of these projects to some of the non-energy goals that these projects realize, such as natural resource goals, emission reduction goals, materials management, and water management goals. In the performance agreement, some of the terms and conditions that could be established would be reporting requirements for the facility.
Where were you just reading those?
There's a written testimony that's been up on all the that's
in,
up
it's
on
in the
list.
Bill right there, too. This is Section 11.
Madam Chair, if I may, the reason I'm so interested in this is the removal of the woody biomass from the large areas around John Day that have been let for stewardship programs is a very important thing, but the measure of the value of it is hidden in that list, because the value in many respects is in reducing the danger of fire, but also actually preserving the forest, because it's drying up over there, and if you don't remove all this stuff, the danger of fire is just incredible. So what I'm trying to get at here is I want to be able to make sure that one of those words...
I think that would go.
Would that be
maybe
the second criteria?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Chair Vig Peterson, Representative Benz, those are exactly the types of benefits or values that, one, we have identified come from this type of activity, and that criteria, the second one in the list, does address exactly that. We would be happy to follow up with you and provide some examples of existing studies we've done, looking specifically at the woody biomass portion of this, and provide a little more detail.
Madam Chair, so the question is not that it's on the list, it's how do you weight it? Mm-hmm. I mean, okay, that's there. We could put a lot of stuff there. How do you determine what's the most valuable? Because all I see there is contribution to state energy, natural resource, water management goal. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. And then there's seven more there.
So, Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Benz, under the questions you're asking are really bringing out the difference between the pilot program and the existing program. So, under the pilot program, the way we would determine the incentive is based on the difference between what it costs to produce the energy and what the energy can be sold for. So, it in this approach, we don't have to we don't have to estimate what all of the, you know, separately what the cost would be. We have a very specific project where the facility is actually producing energy. We know what its cost structure is. We know exactly how much it has to pay to receive that woody biomass material that's been transported from wherever their supplier is. And we have the exact cost structure. We also know exactly what they can sell it for. So the incentive can be set just at the right level to enable the project to be successful. Under the existing program, there isn't that nexus. The existing program provides a tax credit based on the production and collection of the material. And so it's a fixed rate that's currently set in statute. This bill would adjust those rates slightly, but basically it's a, you know, it has to be more general because we don't know where that material is coming from and where it's going when the tax rate is set. Of course, we know when it's certified exactly where it was going, but that we can't adjust the rate for each load. It's the rates are set in the statute. So that's the difference. That's why we think the pilot makes a lot of sense. It can be much more targeted and specific and take into account those kind of costs that you're talking about.
Thank you.
Representative Reardon.
I'm going to try this, too, because I think one same question is, you know, as a former teacher, you might weight certain behaviors differently. So arriving on class all the time, a kid gets a 10, maybe turning in their assignments, they get 20 points, something like that. There could be a different scales. Are there different weights or scales or values to these? So is distance from the source, is that more valuable than, say, fire reduction? Or there? So I think that's what I'm kind of trying to get at, or at least I'm trying to ponder. Is, do you have that matrix developed yet? Maybe not, so.
Chair Vega-Peterson, Representative Reardon. We don't have that matrix developed yet. We've included these criteria in the bill. We would have to work with stakeholders to establish the process by which we would essentially weight each of these criteria and the relative importance they would have in helping us select those projects. That has not been developed and included in this bill, but rather referred to the rulemaking that would come out of this.
And if I could just add one clarification to that, Chair Vega-Peterson, Representative Reardon, the criteria we're talking about is really for selecting projects under the pilot. Because it is a very limited pilot, as Matt said, there will be a handful of projects that would be funded under this program. And so we want to select the projects that are going to have the most value added. The rate that the incentive that those selected projects get will be exactly calculated as the difference between its costs and what it can sell the power for. So it's this selection criteria is different from I think the question about, you know, what the rate would be. It's not like we weight it and we say it had to travel further, it's going to get more of a credit or less of a credit. It's the amount of credit it gets is going to be based on what the cost difference is between producing the power and what they can sell the power for. These criteria for selecting the best projects under the pilot.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Next, we're going to call up Marty Myers, Michelle Bradley, and Stephen Lawn.
Can't wait to see those rules.
I think I got it.
Welcome.
Okay.
The dollar and cents part.
Go ahead and state your name whenever you're ready.
Okay. Chair Vega-Peterson and members of the committee, my name is Marty Myers, and I am general manager of Three Mile Canyon Farms. I'm here today to encourage the Committee on Energy and Environment to approve HB 2449 and its proposed amendments. I participated in the Oregon Dairy Air Quality Task Force, and one of the recommended best management practices for the industry was the development of anaerobic digesters on dairies. This bill specifically encourages this type of investment in dairy operations. The bill itself supports important public policy objectives regarding environmental and economic benefits to rural communities. The environmental benefits include reduction of greenhouse gases, improving clean air, reduction of odors, and protecting clean water. The economic benefits include supporting the dairy industry and Oregon brands such as Tillamook cheese and providing a solid platform for rural jobs and economic development. The artisan cheese businesses in Oregon are developing much like the wine industry began developing 30 years ago. These are small businesses in rural Oregon that depend on a reliable and growing milk supply. This bill will encourage a clean dairy industry with new jobs to develop alongside this burgeoning industry. This bill preserves a stable investment framework for a program that is working today. Since inception of this program, anaerobic digesters have been developed to capture the manure from approximately 35 to 40% of the dairy cows in Oregon. The bill keeps a stable and predictable funding structure that ramps down over the period of the program extension, $5 per wet ton through 2017 and then $3.50 per wet ton for the extension period through 2021. The bill also creates the pilot project with sideboards for DOE selection and administration. We support the program that is designed to focus on woody biomass and specialty food waste feedstocks, and the amendments appropriately include the criteria that would make methane digesters eligible for the program. The biomass tax credit has been a program that works to achieve important public policy goals and is an important piece of the financing tools that make methane digesters viable projects. The program supports and enhances the economic strength of rural communities. We strongly support the program's goals of a healthy forest initiative, and we are happy to work with the OFIC and other members of the forest industry to refine this program to ensure its targeted benefits for the woody biomass industry, as well as methane digesters. These are proven effective tools in achieving the environmental and economic benefits so desirable for our state. Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee, my name is Michelle Bradley, and I'm the general manager at the Port of Tillamook Bay. We operate a manure digester, and we have been doing so for over 15 years. It is a community digester. We actually just invested another $7 million to create the one that we operate now, and we have 3 1-million-gallon processing tanks. And to give you an idea, at max capacity, we take in about 144,000 gallons a day to our digester from about 12 different dairies. So just to give you a little visual on how much comes through there. We also support this House Bill 2449 with the Dash 1 amendment. You stole most of my thunder with all of the attributes for the environmental reasons to do this, you know, improved air quality as well, improved water quality. There's a host of reasons to continue to support alternative energy and looking into it and the byproducts. There's so many value-added products from taking manure that would have just been on the ground, processing it, you know, putting energy back in the grid. You have other value added with the fiber that comes off. There's a lot of potential to continue to for the state to invest in projects such as this. And the Department of Energy has been very willing to hear our issues along with this, so we do appreciate that. And I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson and members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to comment on House Bill 2449 and the Dash amendments. My name is Stephen Lawn, and I'm a biomass utilization consultant. I work with several forest contractors to try to find a value to some of this material that has low or negative value, and we are working on some innovative projects that can utilize this material at something other than what we have today, as we try to build this industry and utilize materials that come out. And we do have the questions that we had on what are benefits besides maybe energy production is we do have fire reduction, more resilient forests, rural economic development and stability, and then also habitat restoration for sensitive species. The companies that I work with are based in Central Oregon, Southwest Oregon, the Willamette Valley, and I'm out of Cottage Grove. I've been involved with the tax credit, the woody biomass tax credit, since 2006, since it first came out. And what we've seen is that allowed to fill a gap where there was a certain amount of materials that were residues in the forest. And what we did is with that extra incentive or tax credit, we were allowed to go out and bring more of that in where it could have a beneficial use. And the technology today that has the greatest scale is still renewable energy. So the production of electricity from this biomass material is the stuff that is at such a scale that we can bring greater amounts in. Some of the other items are at much smaller scale, and we continue to try to find alternatives to that. The extension, we definitely support the extension of the tax credit as presented in this bill, and the changes to the credit rate for woody biomass as presented in the Dash 4 amendment. And that change basically brings, in 2011, during the economic crisis, the tax credit rate for woody biomass basically was cut in half. And what that did was there was still, it presented a value to us, and it also allowed us to go out and bring in materials, but it also restricted some of the areas that we could work and have a benefit. Well, I understand that at that time, everybody was looking at where savings could be cost, and savings could be generated, and also, you know, it was a time that everyone was looking at tax credits with a very fine tooth comb. I do have a concern with Section 6, Paragraph 4, which proposes adjustments to the amendment to the credit rates on possibly an annual basis. And although I believe the intention of this paragraph is well-meaning to help react to market fluctuations, the consequences of changing rates every year, or possibly changing every year, provides uncertainty and another business variable that must be considered when making building and investment decisions. So the fact that a credit rate could be established and then changed either up or down a year from now, and the contracts are going out to try to make a decision on something that you'll be working on for 2 years, are you betting that it's going to go up or down? And that's just another variable that's changing that makes it a tough decision to both bid and make investments on. So our opinion is that whatever the rate is appropriate, let's put that in place. We'll keep that. We've worked with higher rates. We've worked with lower credit rates, and we'll adjust to that. But what we're looking for is stability in the administrative rules and statutes. If we can't find stability in fuel prices or some of these other things that we can't control, but if we have stability in the statutes and the administrative rules for a set period of time, that really helps a lot in the business decision-making process. So for those reasons, we would like paragraph 4 of Section 6 removed from the final bill. Specifically for woody biomass, we support the tax credit rate of $20 a bone dry ton as proposed in the Dash 4 amendment. This rate is consistent with the tax credit rate that was established in 2006. It seemed to be a level that allowed the utilization of a great amount of material. It didn't allow all of it to come in, but we were making some progress, making changes. You know, prior to the reduction in 2011, if you look at the biomass tax credits taken on the woody biomass side prior to 2012, when those new rules came in place, you'll see a dramatic drop in the utilization of that tax credit, because what you had is a dramatic drop in the amount of material that we could go out and fill that gap and bring in. And what we also saw is stewardship projects from the Forest Service for restoration, for fire risk reduction, pulled off the shelves because, again, the gap, we just couldn't make, with all the contributions from the generating facility, from the people working in the woods, you know, this is not a profit-making portion. This is an aspect that we do as part of the overall business. The Forest Service and the state all contributing, when those come together at the appropriate rate, more material can be brought in and beneficially utilized. When it falls apart, then less work gets done. And that affects both the environment and also the rural economies that really depend on, you know, there's an infrastructure in place with skilled workers. The more we lose that, it's hard to find skilled workers when we go to build up. So, you know, this, when you asked about the additional benefits, I wish I could put a dollar value to fire reduction, and, you know, that would be great if I could come to you and say these are also the dollar values of the benefits of this tax credit as far as woody biomass is concerned. So thank you very much for your time, and I'll take any questions that you may have.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? Representative Boone.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you all. Everybody should know Michelle is my constituent, so be nice to her. Yesterday, we took a pretty sweeping motion in this building and attached a 10-year time frame on it. So I think that what we should do is look at things in terms of equity. If we're going to allow tax credits and time frames, et cetera, we shouldn't be picking winners and losers in these different sectors, because they all have their place and they all have value. So I hope that we keep that in mind as we consider these bills up today. And in consideration with what we have done and what we are, you know, may do in the rest of the 5 months, we'll be here. It's a lot of time to do a lot of things. So, and Marty represents, well, actually, some of those cows are, I would say, might have come from Tillamook area.
Yes.
And were. Representative Gomberg, if he were here, would claim them. That creameries in my end of the district. So these are all good things. They're all good. The digester idea is not a brand new one, but some of the newer forms of them are. Farm Power, for example, has a way to unite several smaller farms and with a certain number of cows and to produce power for their operations, plus selling back to the grid, and providing the products that Michelle outlined too that come from this. It's either that or just blow the poop out on the grass. And this is a really great way to utilize it completely. And the cows start and end with it. So it's a great thing. And the biomass, I remember a time when that was not even allowed into the RPS. And now it is. And I've seen a company in my district come and go with the various aspects of that industry too. And so I think that these are ways, and somebody mentioned fire, too. That's a huge consideration. Believe it or not, on the west side, which is more moist than other, but we have a very, very dry year last year. And I can remember walking in the woods way late, and it should have been wet, and it wasn't. And it's very scary. There's not a lot of snowpack. And anything we can do to make our forests safer and more productive, I think that's what we should be considering. So, not really a question, but
thanks for the comments.
Thank you. Representative Holby.
Thanks, Mark. I was curious when you were talking about deleting that paragraph 4 out of section 6, trying to get some more stability in those rates and getting away from adjusting those credits on an annual basis. Is there some middle ground there as far as, I mean, what would give you stability in adjusting the credits if it were like every 2 years, every 5 years, every 10 years, or just never?
Chair Vega Peterson, Representative Holvey, I think what we've come up with is if we can have a rate that's set, then we can work with it and we'll work around. So the adjustments, if I were to say 2 years, that may affect the ability to bid on something that's a 3-year contract and still make that uncertainty. So it's just nice to have something in the business realm somewhat stable and reliable. And even though, you know, if there were great changes either up or down, I think the legislative would revisit this amongst other things if it was at a great scale. When you're looking at possible 25% swings one way or the other every year, that's hard to plan or even make an investment. And so sometimes we may not be happy with the rate, but we know what that rate is. And that's, I think, important for business planning and for going forward. So, we'd always like the highest rate. But we came in and in 2011 took a pretty good cut on that. And we took that back, and we knew that that was going to be the tax credit rate for the current bill, and then worked around that. And so I would say that just the stability during the term of the bill is pretty important from a business perspective.
Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think
These tax credits, having been now working with them since the day I literally walked in this building 8 years ago, has really been quite the education, and they are really challenging to justify. And but my vision of what you're doing is that you have you're asking the state to make a long-term investment in whatever the activities are that you're engaging in, because mm-hmm. that's what a tax credit is, correct, spread over future years. And in return for that guarantee, if you will, of continued investment, the state needs to hear back exactly what it's getting for that money. That's why I was asking the panel earlier, what is the measure of the good that's coming from this incentive? So you guys have to provide it for us. It's no good to be able to say this is all subjective, because there's too many subjective things already in this business. You have to come in and say, here's the avoided cost, here's the space between it, here's how much we need to break even, and here's the good that's coming from it. What is that good? Well, we've heard a scattershot of things. They're all good. What's the value to the state? The reason I'm raising it now is because you're going to get to see us again in revenue. So I need those numbers. So if you, in the manure digester business, are reducing methane that goes in the atmosphere, it would be a very good idea to come here and tell us how much, and then show us that indeed methane is one of the most insidious gases around, does all kinds of damage to the atmosphere. Show us, because this long-term investment will require it, that you prove that we should continue it. The measure of it has to be greater than just something general. I'm all in favor of artesian cheese. I really am. It's great. But what's the value to the state of Oregon, and why do you need us? I'm just saying. So since you get to see us all again, it'd be great, or at least a bunch of us are up here on revenue, it'd be great to see those numbers and that rate of return to the state of Oregon. And then all the other things go with tax credits. But you guys have to sell us on it, just stating the obvious.
Yes.
But it needs something. And I've had, and forgive me, Madam Chair, for going on, but this is a pretty important piece of this discussion. I want to go back to the John Day situation, and a lot of the challenge there is putting a value on the green elements of that which they are doing, because I think most environmentally oriented folks would say hooray for the removal of all of that stuff from the forest and the 50,000 acres that will be the better for it. Well, who's paying, and how much, and what's the value to all of us resulting from it? And someone's got to do the work to come here and show us, because without it, very difficult to justify those continued investments, given the scrutiny we're now giving tax credits. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Was that a question for us, or
that was? I'm sorry. It should be homework for you.
A challenge,
because I'm telling you, if you don't have it when you appear in front of revenue, the future, for, at least for this vote, is not optimistic. How's that?
And I would just, you do have three members of the Revenue Committee, so you will be seeing some of us again, but it is something that we are struggling with as we look at all of these tax credits. It's, you know, what the policy committee is, we know what policy this helps, right? It's a lot of the different ones, and that's our job, is to bring that forward to the Revenue Committee. But once it gets to the Revenue Committee, we need to be able to say not just it's great policy, but what is the cost of that policy to the state, and be able to be accountable for that. So it may not be, you have three people here who are interested in those numbers. It may not be expected to have all those answers right here, but in front of the Revenue Committee, we'd like to have that information. So Representative Widener.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I think this is kind of to help you out a little bit as well. I mean, because even in this committee, I think it's our obligation to actually look at a lot of these different tax credits and decide what goes there and give an honest vote on them, because you're going to be going up against earned income child credits. I mean, a lot of credits there, because they're wanting to go from $64 million to $14 million. So, I mean, it's a huge cut that is going to be happening with these tax credits. So you need to know what you're doing, what good you're doing for the state of Oregon. Are you bringing low-cost power? Is your power cheaper than what they can get on the open market? I mean, all these different things. What are you providing as a benefit to the state with this? Or is it something that can stand on its own? I mean, I see great positives with it, a lot of the stuff that you're doing. But how do we get you to self-sufficiency, to where you're not relying on the state to actually keep your business or in operation.
Okay, yours is a different view as mine.
Representative Reardon.
I think we probably beat the subject to death, but we talk a lot up here. So I'm not on the revenue committee or any ways and means or anything. They don't let me deal directly with money. But what I think about every day is, like, a meeting I just left before here is people from Portland State coming in, and they have an ask of $755 million. Community colleges need $550 million, and K-12 is somewhere between $7.2 billion and $7.8 billion. That's the trade-off. You know, where do we get the revenue for that? So I really support what you're doing. I mean, I really don't. You're cleaning up the forest. You're cleaning up the pastures. It's all really good stuff, but we do need to know a value, and that's why I was asking my question earlier, because that is always going through my head. Good policy, yes, but you know, I need tools to help support that. I've got to know that it's a trade-off with education, which is the number one way that we can build our economy in this state, is having a better education system. We all need that, no matter what part of the state you're in. So. That's kind of where I'm at on this stuff. And I'm with you, it would help you any way I can. But just know where we're at.
Representative Polby.
Thanks. And, you know, I think there's a great value in what you're doing. I'm excited about this pilot project because I think it provides you that opportunity to place a value on the avoided cost of forest fires, for example, and the amount of emissions that could go in the air. And I think, you know, the methane that's produced, you know, that you're able to avoid by using anaerobic digestion, for example, whether it's food waste or manure. And so those arguments, I think, through the pilot project can, you know, eventually, you know, make greater cases for your tax credits down the road, you know, because I think we value that, and that's, I think, the opportunity that's in front of you and us to help us figure out, and the Department of Energy, what is that value?
Appreciate your feedback.
Ms. Myers, I just have a question for you. Just looking at your letter, you're encouraged the adoption of, it looks like, any of the amendments. Is that correct?
Representative Vega Peterson, I appreciate your question. I am totally up to speed on 1 and 2, mm-hmm. and I fully support them. The new amendments that I've heard today, I'm not aware of. Okay. So I don't have an opinion of those at this point.
Okay, thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you very much.
Next, I'd like to call up John Williams, Joel Fisher, and Bill Cluding. Good afternoon, gentlemen. Whenever you're ready, go ahead and get started.
Good afternoon. My name is John Williams, and I'm from Bend. Sure, a person in the committee members. I'm a forestry contractor, and I own a company based in Bend, and we work on the east side of the Cascades, primarily engaged in forest health restoration projects, thinning, hazardous fuels reduction, much of it mechanical and some of it manual. I employ approximately 45 to 60 people directly, and then probably another 30 or 30 to 50 indirectly, truck drivers and mechanics and what have you. We, as a portion of our operation, we process and collect, process, and deliver to biomass power facilities, woody biomass that's produced as a result of our operations. The amount of that material has varied over time. the cost of it is, or the delivered value has varied. The cost of production has, of course, increased, as you likely could guess, with fuel in the last few years. The existing tax credit program has helped assist that component part of the operations, the biomass component, throughout that time frame, because of the, in particular, the cost of the haul that we experience from where we gather the material. Bill, as proposed, and the amendments in general, we support. The $20 a bone dry ton that's proposed in the Dash 4 amendment is a number that's well thought out. It's a number that approximates the original $10 per green ton that was included in the first portion of this biomass tax credit program that began in 06-07. That, on average, is very close to the number that we need to remove a lot of this material and deliver it to the power plants. That number was derived after consultation with myself and others originally when we were asked, you know, what is it going to take to get this material out of the woods to assist in the utilization of it to help move that material to the power plants. The previous testimony regarding the Section 6, Paragraph 4, I concur with. I think that number's been fairly well established. As I say, on an average, it works well for our operation in the woody biomass industry. And the certainty of that number for us is important because we are able to plan ahead. When there's a proposal to possibly change that number, even though it could be up theoretically based on market conditions, I know how hard it is to predict the future and cost, and that's a cost that it would be beneficial to us to have it a static or a dependable number. And then I would also like to say that, you know, I've heard the question asked many times now, what is the benefit of this woody biomass removal? And it's definitely something that's hard to quantify, but it's definitely there. When you drive through an area where the material has not been removed, slash piles are all on fire, and, you know, smoke fills the air for days and days and days, that is one benefit when the material's been removed and doesn't occur. Trying to quantify the relative cost is difficult, but I would say that on average, my estimate would be the cost of biomass or woody biomass removal from the woods with the utilization of the tax credit could be in the neighborhood of $50 to $100 an acre for the acres that have been treated, on average, in the East Side Forest. The cost of fire suppression in an area that's not treated, that has been ignited by a wildfire, the numbers that I hear are somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500 an acre. You can't make a direct correlation. You can't say, well, because of this treatment here, a wildfire did not occur, but you can make the assumption that in some cases that's probably the case. So though the cost is substantial, I think it probably could be considered to be far less than wildfire houses burning, in particular in the areas where we do a lot of our treatment, which is in the urban interface areas. And I think that's it. Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of the Oregon Business Association. We're a statewide business association with 275 plus members across Oregon, from Portland to Boardman, from some of Oregon's largest companies on down to small Main Street sized businesses. We have a committee process that meets monthly. We look at issues such as this, and we coupled that this year with basically going around Oregon to the 11 different regions and holding economic development forums, meeting with local business owners owners and local leaders and talking to them about what can be driving economic development in those areas. And biomass was one of those things that repeatedly came up. We're here to testify in support of House Bill 2449 in general and the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments specifically. We believe this refined program will yield balanced results, optimizing environmental benefits through the reduction of greenhouse gases, cleaner air, and producing a sustainable source of renewable energy. It will also optimize economic benefits by assisting in the financing of capital-intensive projects such as manure methane digesters, which can assist dairy farmers and encourage the production of raw product for Oregon's high-value branded agricultural products like cheese. And with that, we urge your support.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Committee for the Record, Bill Clothing Carpenters Industrial Council. You've listened to the experts. They know what they're doing. I don't know of any process in this state that's more labor intensive than trying to restore forest health, removing woody biomass. Our organization is in complete favor of this. We have facilities that run on cogens, and we need this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Okay. Thank you all very much for your testimony. Next, we're going to call up Daryl Moss, Rob Ferris, and Dylan Cruz. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Robert Ferris, Jr. I'm with Ferris Lumber Company and Evergreen Biopower, LLC. We favor the passage of House Bill 2449. The biomass tax credit is very much appreciated. The Oregon Forest Resources Institute conducted a study nearly 10 years ago that stated that the cost of removing biomass from the forest was about $45 a ton. With inflation and fuel costs that have soared since that report, the tax credit helps, but frankly, it isn't enough. Like everything else in this building, if you want less of something, you tax it, and if you want more of it, you incentivize it. The higher the credit, the higher volume of biomass will be shipped, and I recommend a $30 per ton tax credit. My personal experience and that of my biomass suppliers is that using the tax credit spawned a Department of Revenue audit, which really cast a pall over its use. The low-profit biomass suppliers concluded the cost of the audit outweighed the benefit of the tax credit. I understand there's language where the Department of Energy provides certification of the tax credit, and hopefully this addresses the problem with the Department of Revenue. I asked the committee if urban wood waste should be included in the woody biomass definition. It takes the same processing and transportation. It would remove wood from the landfills and eliminates the methane emissions that are considered 20 times more harmful than CO2 emissions. My family's business is most interested in the pilot program. Simply put, if you pay the electricity producer enough, adequate payment will make it to get the biomass to the power plant. From an administrative standpoint, without throwing my suppliers under the bus, the department may deal with a small number of electricity producers versus hundreds of collectors. I have concern about the establishment of the eligibility requirements. I hope that existing facilities are not put at a disadvantage to new or restarted facilities to be able to buy fuel. Small biomass plants are shut down today because utilities don't want competing power providers, and they pay a fraction of what wind and solar producers receive. The pilot project would level the playing field among renewable power producers. Biomass provides valuable, firm power, but requires a constant fuel supply. Thank you for recognizing the non-economic societal benefits of biomass power in this bill. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dylan Cruz. I'm the policy director at Sustainable Northwest. Sustainable Northwest supports House Bill 2449 for a variety of reasons that have already been mentioned here today. I have written comments submitted for the record, so I don't need to reiterate what's already been said here. I just want to add two thoughts for the record here. The John Day example has been brought up multiple times, and we think about building markets for the byproducts of forest restoration to reduce extreme wildfire, to create jobs in the woods, and to create benefit for air and water quality for all Oregonians. Those are real benefits. What is a problem is that when we are removing this material from the woods as part of those projects, as is required by those projects, and trucking them, very far distances, moving woody biomass, and spending millions of dollars in diesel costs that goes straight up in the air when we're driving past idle capacity that could be used to generate renewable energy and then use those limited stewardship dollars at the state and federal level to put that back into the forest, to do more management activity, to create more jobs. That's a real benefit. That's the serious issue of concern here that this committee needs to address. And I appreciate that that has been brought up today because I really want to emphasize that important point. The other piece here that I've heard today is about equity. What's nice about this legislation is oftentimes when we talk about energy, we get caught up in the electricity component. We talk about power. It's what we know. It's what powers our iPhones and our laptops and turns on the lights. This body's talked a lot about transportation fuels, obviously, but this bill talks about heat. It talks about thermal energy, which is one-third of our nation's energy portfolio. Last year, the Enterprise School in Wallowa County saved $70,000 on its heating bill because it had previously switched from a fuel oil boiler to a wood chip boiler. We have 19 other facilities like that across the state of Oregon, and as the representatives from the Department of Energy mentioned earlier, we can do more of that. Those are real benefits to rural communities, to schools, to public facilities outside of natural gas territory that can be quantified and are very important to our state. So thank you for your consideration of this legislation. We're proud to enter our support for it and appreciate the interest in making sure that we quantify these benefits. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak here. My name is Daryl Moss. I'm the CEO and co-founder of Farm Power Northwest. It's a company my brother and I founded about 8 years ago up in our hometown in Washington. When we heard about this technology of manure digestion, we thought it sounded fun. It worked, and so we kept building more of them. And when we were ready to expand the company outside of our home state, the first place we looked was Oregon, not only because of the brands here, the support for the dairy industry, but very specifically because of the biomass tax credit, and it offered incentives that made it a good place to invest. So starting with a very small base, it's just two guys, we ended up investing $10 million in Tillamook County, Oregon, and we're looking actively in other places in the state to invest and continue to grow the digester industry. I have just a couple slides here to show you. This is our first facility in Tillamook. It actually takes manure from five dairy farms via a pipeline system that we installed at great cost, but it's a very efficient system. We're able to take manure from tiny dairy farms that have been there for 100 years and have maybe 100 cows on them, and we're able to take them from the larger farms that have maybe 1,000 cows on them, which would be large for Western Oregon. That project makes about 1 megawatt of power. It costs about $4 million. This is our power plant. We can run one of these biogas engines day and night, running on nothing but cow manure and food waste. We take in about 10 to 20% of our input is food waste. The rest is cow manure. We can actually blend them, and the bacteria will eat that just like they'll eat anything else. If it has sugar and protein, it's fuel. This is our second project. If you see the very large manure lagoon on the right-hand side of your screen there, that is one of the largest manure tanks in the western part of the United States, and it's right next to the town of Tillamook. And we'd like to show this one because digesters, not only are they capturing energy, but they're capturing aerosols, they're capturing organic compounds, they're capturing odors, all those things that used to escape from manure. So this is our big tarp over the top of that pond in addition to the digester. We're not only making fuel out of this energy, but we're preventing odors and preventing methane gas from emitting into the air. What's so great about the biomass tax credit as it relates to manure is that it encourages us to use a feedstock that's already out there. The manure is already there. It's already emitting odors. It's already emitting methane. It's just encouraging someone to go make the investment to go out there and capture it. So I've got up here, taking one cow's manure and putting it in a digester is about the same greenhouse gas equivalent as removing one car from the road, roughly 5 tons per cow per year. So every cow you get in a digester is like taking a car off the road. This is where the eight cow manure digesters are in the state of Oregon. You can see they're spread around. Our two there in the northwest.
There's at least 17 dairy farms, depending on the month, up to 22, 23 dairy farms in Oregon that have their manure digested in a digester. Eight digesters is actually the second most of any state west of the Mississippi. California is the only state that has more, largely as a result of the progressive policies put in place. So the reason we came here, the reason other members of the industry have invested is because there was an incentive, and because they said this is a state where we can build these projects of very large payback over a lot of years, but it makes sense to do it in a state that supports the industry. I wanted to put this slide up here. There originally were two digesters in the state of Oregon. You heard from Michelle Bradley at the Port of Tillamook Bay, the first one, and there was another small one not far from the city of Oregon, city of Salem, excuse me. The biomass tax credit, you see, there was first became available in about 2008. You could first start applying for it, and within 2 or 3 years, you can see the expansion of the industry. Now, the power prices are dropping in this period, but because of the incentive that's available there, a lot of people made investments. One digester in 2011, two in 2012. You can see they keep growing, keep expanding. We're at the point now where there's over 38,000 or so milk cows that are being digested. That's over a third of the milk cows in the state of Oregon, closing in on half of them. And so once again, it's a huge resource. Up until that energy was just going up in smoke. It was being wasted and nothing happened with it. You notice there, Representative Bentz asked for some numbers. Those numbers on the far right there, the amount of cows that are currently being digested is removing approximately 200,000 tons of CO2 equivalent a year in terms of greenhouse gases. It's also generating enough power for 7,000 to 8,000 houses out of nothing but cow manure and food waste. So my takeaways here is that the tax credit program works as it is for manure. It's done a very good job of bringing a new business to Oregon and expanding the industry, getting more and more farmers interested in these digesters and incentivizing them to participate. I also want to point out that every digester in the state that's received biomass tax credit is still in operation. It's a viable technology. It's commercialized. It works. And it's been a great success. At present, we're removing the equivalent of 38,000 cars worth of greenhouse gas from the atmosphere, and providing at least 7,000 homes. It's probably more than that. And also very high-wage rural jobs. We pay well above the median income for any kind of rural area you go into. If you talk to any other developers that are here, they've got to find and train very skilled technicians to come out there and take care of these motors. So we think it gives a good stepping stone for rural communities that you can take people that have some experience with mechanics and get them more and more experienced. The tax credit, we believe, is a good investment. Now, there's obviously a lot of good investments in front of you, including in the biomass tax credit from Woody Biomass, from other options that Oregon Department of Energy wants to bring forward. So in discussions with the Department of Energy and others, what is available under Amendments 1 and 2, the proposal on the table that the industry believes we can live with over the long term is to reduce the amount of tax credit available per ton of manure by 30% over the extension. And so you have a lot of decisions to make. There's a lot of more incentives out there. But we feel like with that ramping down over the course of the extension, the industry can stay healthy. We can hopefully keep growing it. And we would appreciate your support in Amendments 1 and 2. Excuse me, there were so many amendments when I made this slide, I couldn't straighten them all out. 3 and 4 may be fine, but I know 1 and 2 are the ones we were looking for, and we appreciate your support. So,
questions for this panel? Representative Bentz.
Thank you. Thank you for this information. It's extremely helpful. The next slide, which I'm assuming you're going to go to, will show us the cost that the state is paying for each one of those benefits. I'm being mean.
Sure.
In order for us to put those together with what is, you know, how much we're paying for what we're getting, so you'd have to show us what the tax credit is and what we're paying per ton. As you told us, there'd be a 30% cut, but I don't know cut in what.
Sure.
So we need to see that, and I'm just giving you advance warning of what you're going to get when you get to revenue if you appear before us. So it's got ROI. Thing, pretty simple, but I mean, this is a great start.
I'll have several slides for you, sir.
Could I respond to your concern about what is the value to the state of Oregon? You know, biogenic carbon neutral power is replacing fossil fuels. That's important. The credits target rural Oregon. You know, the state may be on the hook for as many as a dozen rural counties going broke, and that's just going to be an incredible financial burden. And I just have no idea what that'll cost. But targeting these credits where people need it most in rural Oregon is useful. In our case, we received about $13 million in business energy tax credits, and we've employed a dozen people directly, and it's contributed to the employment of a total of 430
direct jobs in our plant, plus we employ hundreds of contractors. The benefit is very far-ranging. The business energy tax credit, we have replaced 2 million therms of natural gas annually to in process steam to condition our blocks and peel our, and dry our veneer, our wood products. And so there is a displacement and a true environmental benefit. The when we did it, the natural gas price was $14. It's about $4 now. But our electricity rates have gone up over 55%. And so it may result in us going off of the grid and providing power for our own plants if we can't get an amount of money that we can operate on. We're providing power for 7,000 homes daily from our facilities. Just to give you a little perspective of just one biomass plant, one small 10 megawatt plant, we're only making maybe an average of 5 megawatts to go onto the grid. Three megawatts worth of steam is used in our plants, and the rest is water that we're burning off.
Thank you, Ron, for that. And that's exactly the right kind of specific detail. We just have to carry out that additional step and show what the amount is that we're paying for those great results. The thing that bothered me about the John Day situation is that there had never been a number placed on the value of the activity on the ground. And it seemed to me that that was unfortunate. And I know it may seem subjective, but there is a huge value to the long-term survival of those forests over on that side of the mountain. The same may be true here. I don't know the number. I don't know how to say having this all burned down is one thing, having it still there and surviving in these drier years is another. What's that value? But it needs to be on that list. Mm-hmm. So at least when we're evaluating the tax credit and the investment, we know about it. I think a lot of people just say, well, that's great, and never carry it any further. But given all the times we've said it, I'm sure when this arrives in front of revenue, we will see those numbers, because it's going to be hard to evaluate without them.
Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the other thing I'd kind of say, I'm follow up with Representative Bence a little bit for you, Rob, because you're on the woody biomass side. A lot of things I've learned today, that Representative Boone's full of crap in her district is one of the things we found out. But besides that, I think there's a conservation issue that you have as well. Because, if our forest floors stay littered with the debris and everything, you don't have that new growth that spurs deer, elk, a lot of animal activity and stuff. The food that's there for the animals when you go through and clean up our forest floors is something else to take in. You had a great presentation on where you're at. You need to just get the cost piece into it and you're done. And with you, Rob, there's so much potential that you have, that what you guys do for our forest is impeccable, and we need to start doing our federal forest, and I think you need to bring that to the Revenue Committee.
The hunting licenses for deer and elk are at 1952 and 1972 levels because of the ingrowth and the lack of openings on our national forests, and so it's harming recreation and the rural livelihoods in that area too. It is a big, very big story to tell.
Thank you very much.
At great hesitation, can I perhaps address Representative Johnson's concern about with the initial panel about a subsidy?
Yes.
You heard from me that wind and solar receives far more, perhaps double what biomass power receives, and you heard that the avoided cost rates today that biomass receives is $37 to $40 per megawatt. That's the equivalent of 37 or 40 cents on your residential bill and mine. our rates, if we look at our residential bill, it's about 11 to 12 cents or $110 to $120 per megawatt. The utilities receive these excess payments from consumers from programs such as the Blue Sky program for providing the renewable power. I look at that the pilot program is returning those payments to the provider of the renewable power rather than the utility. The cost of biomass power was said to be $80. That's only two-thirds of the $110 to $120 that we're all paying on our electric bill. This bill addresses the disparate treatment between biomass, solar, and wind, and the predatory practices of utilities wanting to destroy the competition. Thank you for the opportunity to share my comments.
Thank you all very much. Next, I'd like to call up Matt Landauer, Mark Landauer, and Valerie Johnson, and Link Cannon.
We have Link.
Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson, members of the committee. My name is Mark Landauer. I'm here on behalf of the Special Districts Association of Oregon today. Special districts represent many wastewater treatment providers in the state, and I'd like to make a few comments regarding 2449, which we are very supportive of. Representative Reardon, I believe, recently took a tour of a wastewater treatment plant in the city of Gresham. And this particular wastewater treatment plant, as a result of some efficiencies and some pretty substantial investments, has gotten to the point where it is virtually a contributor to the grid. They are generating enough electricity to treat all the wastewater that is being received at their treatment facility due to the installation of solar panels and as well as the installation of fat, oil, and grease collectors that are used in their biogas generators. To get to Representative Bence's point, and I would have to do the additional math, this effort on behalf of the city of Gresham has saved their ratepayers in excess of $500,000 in electricity costs alone. I want to point out that fats, oils, and grease that enter the wastewater system create a lot of problems for sewage treatment providers. That fat, oil, and grease solidifies, creates clogs, and as a result, many of the treatment providers spend a great deal of money cleaning out those lines. In fact, Clean Water Services, a major wastewater treatment facility in Washington County, spends nearly $4.2 million annually due to the diminished ability of the treatment capacity of their plants due to fats, oils, and grease being in the water. City of Portland spends on an annual basis $100,000 alone just to clean out pipes due to fats, oils, and grease. In fact, the city of Portland, I have been told, spends approximately $12 million in additional treatment costs just to deal with waste food that enters their treatment system. From our perspective, the bottom line is that maintaining the incentives to collect fats, oils, and grease has multiple benefits. It keeps it out of our wastewater systems, thereby lowering maintenance and treatment costs, and fog that has been collected can then be used to generate clean energy, thereby additionally lowering treatment costs. I've maintained or resisted the temptation to provide you photographs of fog in the sewer pipes, but at some point, if you're curious, it's not a very pleasant sight, but keeping this stuff out is very cost effective, and thank you for the time.
Good afternoon, Chair Vega Peterson, Vice Chairs and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Johnson. I'm the president of D.R. Johnson Lumber Company and our affiliated companies, including Prairie Wood Products in Prairie City, Oregon, which is the John Day situation. We are 13 miles east of John Day, but that is the location where we have a woody biomass cogeneration facility. If you will, I'm very sensitive to the hour, but I would just like to quickly skip through the profile of our company if I could. My father founded our company in 1951 with one sawmill in Riddle, Oregon. Mm-hmm. In 1967, he added a glulam beam plant, which still is running. And in fact, we're excited that we're about to complete our installation of presses so that we can build structural cross-laminated timbers, hopefully within the next 2 to 3 months. And then in 1980, he began buying facilities on the east side in the mid-1970s, including Prairie Wood Products, the sawmill, which has just been auctioned off, Grant Western Lumber in John Day, and later in the 90s, Wallowa Forest Products, which was closed and was auctioned off during the depression that we've all gone through. The CoGEM facilities were built first in Prairie City in 1985 and virtually a mirror copy of it at Riddle in 1986. Both of those cogeneration facilities have been down completely since about 4 or 5 years ago for different reasons. The Riddle facility is within the publicly owned power district, and the one on the east side is not able to deliver power to Pacific Core. So it negotiates its power contracts with Idaho Power or the co-op owned utilities. So we have a strong footprint in both sides of the mountain. The sawmill at Prairie Wood Products is designed to use small logs, which is what is coming off of the 10-year stewardship program in the Malheur National Forest. It's also designed to burn woody debris in our cogeneration plant. And those two facilities are very synergistic with each other. It's a very integrated situation. The CoGEM facility is called CoGEM because it creates steam that the sawmill then buys from the CoGEM plant to run their dry kiln facilities. The lumber coming out of that region must be dried. Without it, you end up with airplane propellers and, as the carpenters say, studs walking out of the walls. Once you dry it, you basically stabilize the wood fiber, and it becomes a very good building product, but you have to be certain that your drying application has been completed properly. The sawmill also has a problem because as we buy small logs, we use a debarker, which creates a lot of woody debris or biomass, as well as the trimmings and the sawdust and so forth, which can be used in our cogeneration plant. And without a place to go, in the old days we had wigwam burners where it was dumped and burned into the atmosphere. Now we have CoGEM, which burns it. It's got a sophisticated scrubber system. It's got electrostatic. It takes all the bad stuff out of emissions and returns some carbon to the air, but with sustainable forestry, as we're regenerating the health of these forests, we're planting younger trees and growing more carbon sink so that the whole cycle completed is effectively absolutely carbon neutral if we're managing forests and our byproducts properly. We very, very much support the HB 244-4 because we are in a region where there are not industry infrastructure has vanished over the recent decade or two of tough times. And so the forests are vast and long distances away. It's important that the product pays its way out of the woods. Currently, the Forest Service and awardee of the stewardship project, it's a constant struggle. They're required to remove all of the extra biomass in the woods because the point of the stewardship project is to restore the forest health. And there's a constant tension between removing that and having a market to go to that is viable versus stacking it in huge barn size slash piles and lighting a match to it. I'm sure all of you are very aware of the damage of just that kind of burn would happen, much less the wildfire burns that we've seen growing over time. I just thought I'd give you a quick statistic that the Malheur National Forest has, in a 2010 report, they have identified that they need to treat, to rehabilitate the forest, 272,000 acres. And additionally, in the 1960s and 70s, over two decades, there were two large fires, wildfires, a total of 234 acres. In the 30 years hence, from 1980 to 2010, there have been 71 large fires burning 305,000 acres in the Malheur National Forest. The need to have a home for the biomass is critical, but given today's avoided cost power rates, it does not pencil out. It just does not pencil out without some value placed on the additional benefits of a cogeneration plant that generates enough electricity for 7,000 to 8,000 homes a year, of carbon neutral energy replacing fossil fuel energy, which, as we all know, is not carbon neutral, which provides employment. If our sawmill was running, we'd have 45 employees in the mill. If our cogen was running, we'd have 13 employees there, and the multiplier effect of 2.5 jobs for every family wage job in our company would have a tremendous impact on the local community there. And restore our forest to its more natural, vigorous health. We all know we're going through a bit of a dry cycle, both on the entire central east side and the southwest part of our state, and even, as Rob pointed out, creeping up into the wetter climates up here. We can't make it rain more, but we really do need to very much zero in on what we can do to make our wild areas, our forest land, more drought resistant. And I'd love to have all day with you. But to summarize, to just throw one last thing on here, Dylan Cruz was talking about Sustainable Northwest, and I want to give a shout out to them, because one of our real problems on the east side is the expansion of juniper, which sucks a tremendous amount of water from our water tables and does not have a lot of market value. Sustainable Northwest is working very hard to create a juniper lumber market. We certainly support that, but I also want you to know that at Prairie City, we also have devised a type of an auger. Trying to chip juniper is kind of like trying to use a carrot peeler on celery. You end up with strands in it. And we've devised a system where we can break the juniper biomass down and use it, which has high BTU, if we use it in the proper percentage with our other green and wet biomass, to a very good advantage. So I'd be happy to answer any more questions. I'm going to leave your staff with a stack of my business cards. I would ask each of you, encourage or invite any of you that would like to contact me further for any more information. I'd be happy to do it. I've paid close attention to Representative Spence's tenacity on wanting more information. It's a very, very complex issue to put a price tag on, but we all know that the cost is real and the benefits are great. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Link Cannon with the Oregon Forest Industries Council. You have my written testimony and one page on all this. I'm just going to hit the bolded stuff, which will take me a very short period of time. And I'd like to talk a little bit about the picture I handed out to you. OFIC supports the dash ones and the dash fours. The important things to us in those particularly are clarifying and aligning the definitions of biomass. It's been a disjoint in the law for some time, a bunch of different definitions, and we fully support bringing those all into alignment. It extends the program out to 2021. We're supportive of that for all the reasons that you've heard from the producers and others. We think that $20 is an appropriate level. They were not picked out of thin air. I think if you look at the Department of Energy's testimony on the last page, they have a pie chart that show the usage of the credit. And the originally the woody biomass piece of that was about $5 million a year. And when it was cut in half from $10 a green ton to $10 a dry ton, it went down to about $1 million. So it was working great. And then it was when it was halved, it went down by about 80%. And I think what you've heard from Mr. Lawn is, you know, if there's a credit, it will help. It's how much the credit is depends how much it will help. So I've talked to a lot of folks, including Mr. Williams and Quicksilver Steve and others, and $20 seems to be kind of the floor that, that people think is really appropriate. And finally, we support the pilot program concept. It makes a lot of sense just from an administrative vantage point. Rather than paying somebody some money to go out in the woods and collect wood and take it somewhere, it makes a lot of sense to have a facility that gets a price for its electricity or its power such that it can pay that price. It's just much more efficient. There may be problems with it, but I think the pilot project is the right way to go about it. So we support that. I just wanted to hand this out to you, one, because I've been around too long and I don't feel right if I don't hand something out in paper to the committee assistant. But this is a thing done by the Oregon Forest Resources Institute. And this is a picture. You know, we talk about the benefits, and I appreciate Representative Bentz and Representative Johnson's concerns of quantifying those. This is a pictorial representation of those, and what we have to do is put numbers on it. But we talk about carbon neutrality of forest biomass, and I like to think of it as carbon positive. And the reason is, if you look at this picture, on the far right-hand side, there's trees going up in flames. That's a carbon emission. If you take those trees and put them over on the right-hand side of the picture and utilize that energy, you actually get less emissions of it, like particulate and other types of emission. You get the same CO2 emission, but you offset fossil fuel use. So not only are you taking advantage of the carbon emissions that are going to go into the atmosphere anyway, but you're doing so in a fashion that are part of the cycle, but you're doing so in a fashion that will leave this other stuff at the bottom in the ground. So Representative Bentz has a furrowed brow. Did I not explain that well? So with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you. Questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So we just have one more person who's going to testify on this bill. I am going to hold over the House Bill 2833 until next week and the work sessions as well. So don't worry, committee. But I would like to call up Roger Beyer and anyone else who's here to testify on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Roger Beyer, here representing Oregon Dairy Farmers Association. You've heard a lot about this already. You've heard from dairy farmers and you've heard from dairy digesters. I'm just here to say Dairy Farmers Association supports the bill with the -1 and the -4 amendments. And we understand we have some homework to do before we get to the Revenue Committee. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
With that, committee, I'm going to go ahead and close the public hearing on House Bill 2449. As I already said, we're going to move the rest of the stuff till next week. So if there's nothing else, I'm going to go ahead and close the meeting of the House Energy and Environment Committee. Thank you.